Look, I'm as passionate about evangelism as the next Christian, Hamilton, but I simply don't understand how you think that any so-called philosophical proofs of God accomplish anything.
Don't they?
Well, in my experience, they do not draw men to God, but cause them to become atheists or agnostics.
Surely the only way to God is through faith. Faith in Jesus Christ.
But what do you mean by faith, Dorothy?
A sense of the divine.
But don't all men have an innate sense of the divine? Though I suppose we may try to repress it.
Repress it how?
Well, I suppose we repress it by conflicting desires.
Or more than likely by culture and society, the current fascination with all things secular. We're all fairly comfortable and without any sense of urgency. We're not even driven by the potency of our primitive passions and desires.
Steady on, Humphrey. Mixed company and all that.
Oh, John, you are so sweet.
Oh, thank you for noticing.
But honestly, I don't fear that this is a secular society as much as it is becoming a pagan one.
Pa! Would that were true. At least a true pagan would give Christians something to work with. Throughout history, it was the pagans who were most readily converted to Christianity.
You don't believe England's falling into paganism, then?
Well, until we see Parliament opened by the slaughtering of a garlanded bull in the House of Lords, or cabinet ministers leaving sandwiches in Hyde Park as an offering for dryads, I don't believe we need worry about paganism.
Where do you come up with this?
You really have let the situation get out of hand, haven't you, Wormwood?
I don't know what happened.
It's obvious what happened. Through this girl and her disgusting family, the patient is now getting to know more Christians every day, and very intelligent Christians, too.
Too many for me to handle alone.
You're not alone. Each one has his own tempter, and we may need a council between us to assess the situation. But you can be sure that for a long time it will be quite impossible to remove spirituality from his life.
Which leaves me with what, Uncle?
Obviously, we must corrupt it. No doubt you have often practiced transforming yourself into an angel of light as a parade ground exercise.
Yes, I have.
Now is the time to do it in the face of the enemy. The world and the flesh have failed us. A third power remains. Spiritual corruption. And success of this third kind is the most glorious of all. A spoiled saint, a Pharisee, an inquisitor, or a magician makes better sport in hell than a mere common tyrant or narcissist.
Well, what do you suggest?
Looking round at your patient's new friends, I find that the best point of attack would be the borderline between theology and politics. Several of his new friends are very much alive to the social implications of their religion. That in itself is a bad thing, but good can be made out of it.
How so?
You insist on being spoon-fed, don't you? Let's return to the conversation and note the views of the one who spoke a moment ago about paganism.
Look, for my money, Christianity began to go off the rails very early on.
What do you mean, off the rails?
It departed from the core teachings of Jesus. People began adding to the simplicity of what he taught, twisting it all up. Anyone who looks at the historical Jesus will see the essence of pure Christian tradition.
What did this historical Jesus teach?
It's clear from the Gospels that he was all for empowering the common man, rising up and throwing off the shackles of the rich.
So you're saying Jesus was the Karl Marx of the first century?
To put it simply, yes.
Good heavens, I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, do you see? The historical Jesus, for some, is very Marxian, operating along revolutionary lines. Whereas it wasn't so long ago that we constructed a historical Jesus on purely liberal and humanitarian lines. The advantages of these constructions, which we intend to change every 30 years or so, are manifold.
Are they? In what way?
In the first place, they all tend to direct men's devotions to something which does not exist. For each historical Jesus is unhistorical. The ghastly documents they call the Bible say what they say and cannot be added to.
Well, If that's the case, then how do you create new versions of the historical Jesus?
By suppressing one point of Jesus' teaching and exaggerating another. That single emphasis takes what he taught completely out of context and distorts the rest. What is left but subjective guesswork that inevitably caters to the human's own predispositions and political views?
Right.
And of course, all such constructions place the importance of their historical Jesus in some peculiar theory he is supposed to have promulgated. We thus distract men's minds from who he truly is and what he actually did.
I see. So, for example, we render him solely a good moral teacher.
And then conceal the reality that he simply couldn't have made the claims he made about himself and still be considered good or moral.
Right, perfect.
Our third aim with these constructions is to destroy the devotional life. We replace the real presence of the enemy, otherwise experienced by men in prayer and sacrament, with a substitute. A merely probable, remote, shadowy, and uncouth figure who spoke a strange language and died a long time ago. Such an object cannot, in fact, be worshipped. Instead of the creator adored by its creature, you soon have merely a leader acclaimed by a follower, and finally, a distinguished character approved by a judicious historian.
Yes, I understand.
I sincerely doubt it. Fourthly, besides being unhistorical in the Jesus it depicts, religion of this kind is false to history in another sense. No nation and few individuals are really brought into the enemy's camp by the historical study of the biography of Jesus simply as biography. Indeed, materials for a full biography have been withheld from men. The earliest converts were converted by a single historical fact, the resurrection, and a single theological doctrine, the redemption, operating on a sense of sin which they already had. The Gospels came later and were not written to make Christians, but to edify Christians already made.
How do you know all this hideous rubbish?
I paid attention in class, little fool. You would do well to pay attention now. You must always encourage this historical Jesus, however dangerous he may seem to be to us at some particular point.
Right, but what does all this have to do with politics?
Politics?
You mentioned politics earlier, the general connection between politics and Christianity, didn't you?
I did. And in that, our position is more delicate. Certainly we do not want men to allow their Christianity to flow over into their political life, for the establishment of anything like a really just society would be a major disaster. On the other hand, we do want, and very much want, to make men treat Christianity as a means, preferably, of course, as a means to their own advancement, but failing that as a means to anything, even to social justice.
Well, surely not.
I don't mean social justice as a reality. I mean, we must get a man at first to value social justice as a thing which the enemy demands, and then work him to the stage at which he values Christianity because it may produce social justice. Do you see?
No.
I'll try again. The enemy will not be used as a means to an end.
Right.
Men or nations who think they can revive the faith in order to make a good society might just as well think they can use the stairs of heaven as a shortcut to the nearest chemist's shop. Fortunately, it is quite easy to coax humans round this little corner. Only today, I have found a passage in a Christian writer where he recommends his own version of Christianity on the ground that only such a faith can outlast the death of old cultures and the birth of new civilizations. Do you see the little rift? Believe this not because it is true, but because it serves a purpose.
Ah.
See, that's the game.
Yes.
Now, round up the other tempters we need to meet.
Yes, sir. Who exactly?
Let us begin with Slumtrippage. She is in charge of your patient's young woman.
Right. I'll find her.
You won't need to look far. I can see her beady little eyes in the ashes behind the fire grate.